Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With a name like Tom Bravo, I should have grown up to be on MTV. I tried to make myself a star in high school. Singing, doing stand-up in the cafeteria, acting in all the school plays. None of that panned out for me, though. Not for this Tom Bravo. But that's okay. The MTV I grew up with doesn't exist anyway. With no interest in, or, honestly, prospects for college, I hunted for something interesting to do with myself. I didn't want some hamster wheel job. I wanted something with excitement and action. But not as much action as, say, a police officer. Firefighter seemed too obvious. Plus, I knew some guys from high school who joined the local fire station, and I would have rather not trusted them with my life. And of course, there was always the military. But I tell you, growing up during a war based on lies and propaganda put a damper on that for me. No disrespect to the troops whatsoever, but the leaders of this country, well, I wouldn't trust them with my life either. My high school football coach, Mr. Carwell, actually recommended I look into being a park ranger. I thought he was joking. Back then, I thought park rangers were basically outdoor hall monitors. But doing some research, I realized Mr. Carwell was right. Park rangers don't just scold people for littering. They protect visitors and animals. They search for people who've gotten lost. They keep track of populations and resources. And sure, there's tours and the day-to-day stuff, but every job has its boring side. At least mine is outside in a beautiful park. After a few weeks of training and taking some certifications, I received my first solo posting on the night shift. At night, during the off-season, only one ranger works the park. The gates lock at 10:30, so the only people in the park are dedicated year-round campers, and they mostly sleep. Sometimes I have to drive over to the campsite and tell a drunk group to quiet down, but rarely. My job mainly consists of sitting around the ranger station, waiting for service calls, watching the trail cameras, and listening for any alarms. During the busy season, when two of us share the night shift, we take turns going out on patrol. Working solo, I can't leave the station unless absolutely necessary. Believe me, I find many ways to make it necessary. I take a fair amount of calls each night. Most often, somebody wakes up and realizes a loved one is missing. And most times, that loved one can be found returning from the restrooms or a big tree in the woods. Many campers can't be bothered to walk all the way to the campground restrooms. In one case, a missing spouse magically reappeared out of an overly friendly stranger's tent. Unfortunately, I had to stick around for the aftermath of that one to make sure I didn't need to call in the stadies. The park also has its fair share of purported cryptids, many owing their origins to the indigenous folklore. People occasionally called during the night to tell me they saw the eyes of a skinwalker or a prowdy owl watching them between the trees. Of course, these calls obligate me to investigate in case something dangerous really is prowling around the campsite. I usually don't find anything besides maybe a deer or a normal old owl, though. I had yet to see any of the mythical creatures myself, not even Bigfoot, of whom our park boasts a reported sighting. But I think that changed on the night of the last blood moon. I'm not sure if the moon had anything to do with it. It's just how I remember the date. November 8th, 2022. Just about 4 years into my career. That's the night a camper called me around 3:30 a.m. to report someone calling out from the woods. I asked what they were yelling, and he couldn't say. He said it sounded like a word, but it was either from another language or nonsense. "Sure it's a person?" I asked. He said, Yeah, pretty sure. Maybe a kid. Great. One of those kids who couldn't be bothered to visit the restroom had gotten turned around on their way back to camp. Now they were lost out in the dark, shouting helplessly for all the mountain lions to hear. I checked my shotgun and locked it into the rack inside my pickup. While driving down the unlit road, I clumsily swapped the batteries in my flashlight with fresh ones from the glove box. I found my caller poking into the woods with his own flashlight. I asked him to show me where he had last heard the calling child. He brought me to a tree near the sleeping campground. I watched the sparse tents to see if anyone was awake, perhaps wondering where their kid went, but all were still. The first sound came from upward to the south, to my left at the time. A cackling, "Ah." "Well, that came from the trees," I said to the caller. I studied him to see if that maybe had not been the noise he called me about. His visible confusion deepened. "It was coming from, like, straight ahead of me," he said. "And also, I didn't think it sounded like a kid that time."
"I didn't think so either," I agreed. Bullet dodged. Nobody was missing.
The sound gave me a mystery, though. I'd been in that park 5 or 6 nights a week for 4 years and never heard a sound like that before. I dismissed the caller and told him I'd stay in the area for a little while. I knew one of the hiking trails went up in the direction the sound originated. I decided to follow it a little ways to catch a glimpse of whatever animal made that noise. I drove my truck to the first bend in the trail, but then I had to leave it behind. The pedestrian trail wasn't wide enough even for my little Ford Ranger. As I collected my flashlight from the door, I smirked a little. The idea that someone might have released a pet parrot in the park crossed my mind. We had people leave non-native animals behind before, sometimes a pet snake that got too big or a parakeet that drove its owners crazy. I wouldn't be catching any parrots in the dark, that much I knew. I heard it maybe 50 yards in front of me. My flashlight beam moved instinctively. The sound did have an unmistakable human quality. I still didn't think it sounded like a kid, but it could have been either a male or female teenager. Was this just some sort of prank? I wondered. "Hello? Ranger Service," I called into the trees. "If somebody's out there, come out. I'll take you back to camp. You can't be out here this late." As I awaited a response, I stewed in the unusual silence. Normally, crickets would be chirping all around. The season was a little late for the frogs, but it was abnormally warm and I still heard them occasionally. Not that night, though. No frogs, insects, or birds made a peep. All stayed hidden and quiet. Even the leaves barely whispered in the hint of a breeze. I shone my light up at the treetops to search for something there. Nothing still. Hoping to lure the person out, I dared not wander into the dark woods alone. I tried a little trick of my own. I shut off my flashlight and loudly muttered, "Guess it's nothing." Without turning my back, I walked a little ways down the trail, just far enough to maybe convince the person hiding that I left. Then I crouched to wait. The sound came again before I reached the bottom of my squat. I shot up, suppressing my instinct to turn the flashlight back on. I didn't know for sure if I'd been spotted yet. Maybe I still had the upper hand. Staring into the trees, my eyes slowly adjusted to the blood moon's hazy light. Only a fraction of its red glow filtered through the trees. I saw what looked like a shadow bulge outward from behind a skinny trunk. The outline of some lurker peering out at me. I wondered how I could have missed them before. Still thinking they hadn't seen me, I patiently waited for the shadow to fully emerge. I prayed the prankster would come easy. I had the authority to arrest them for trespassing, but out there in the woods, I had no backup and no witnesses if things went sideways. The shape of a tall figure broke away from the tree. Any notion of the things humanity
broke apart in my mind upon the sight of it. It was too tall, too thin. I could make out no further details. It crept slowly, noiselessly. Wisps of its shadowy essence trailed behind like ragged robes in the breeze. I didn't think it would have left its cover if it thought I was still watching, but at the same time, I felt it watching me. Maybe it thought I just couldn't see that far in the dark, or that it was otherwise invisible. I aimed my flashlight at the shape and pushed the switch. The trusty beam issued forth, cutting past dozens of trees and passing right through where I had seen the figure creeping with my own eyes. Somehow, it vanished. I'm not saying it dodged out of the way or ducked out of sight. I'm saying it disappeared like it was never there. The figure completely evaporated. I'd been staring right at it when I turned the flashlight on. As if to torment me, to tell me I wasn't seeing things, the invisible creature made its signature sound again. This time, it drew out the opening vowel, letting the shriek linger and raising every hair across my skin. I sprinted back to the truck. I've seen bears, even a mountain lion once, but that moment maintains the award for the most scared I've ever been. Something unnatural was lurking in my park, and I had no idea what it was or what it wanted. But I had seen it, and it had seen me. In the safety of my locked cab, headlights on, shotgun unlatched, I called Barry, my supervisor. Barry is your standard outdoorsman, scared of nothing but wise enough to avoid danger. He knows how to handle any animal, including unruly humans, and he certainly does not like to be disturbed at night, though at the time he was technically on call. I struggled with how to explain what I'd seen to him after he grunted at me through the phone. How could I tell my grizzled man of the earth superior what I'd just seen, which was, in essence, what? A shadow? I ended up saying, "There's something screaming out in the woods near the campground and it's scaring people." I tried not to let on that people included me, but as I detailed my location, Barry read between the lines. 10 minutes, he growled, then hung up. During those 10 minutes, I heard the sound 2 more times. The first originated up the trail where I had seen whatever I saw. The second sounded closer. I watched the trees washed out from my headlights carefully, but did not see the stalking shadow nearby. I checked the clock on the radio. 8 minutes, maybe 9, had passed since I called Barry. If he said 10 minutes, he meant 10 minutes. I'd given him my exact location beyond the trailhead, and my headlights were on, so I hoped I would be easy to find. That hope quickly morphed into curiosity, though. I had only seen the shadow moving in the dark. I wondered if it was too, I don't know, thin or something, to be seen in the light, like a mist. I reached around the steering wheel and shut off my headlights. The instant the beams died, I saw something move away from my truck. Although it vanished quickly, I saw enough to be certain it was the same thing I had seen moving in the trees. That's when I realized the thing I'd seen wasn't disappearing. Not in the flashlight's beam, nor the headlights. The lights made it invisible. It must have been standing directly in front of my truck, looking in at me. Perhaps more unsettling, it had stopped making that horrible sound after it found me. Had the purpose of that sound been to draw me into the woods? And did it stop because it thought it had me trapped? Light filled my cab. I heard crunching dirt and a grumbling engine. Barry pulled up behind me in his personal Jeep. I almost got out of the truck to go to Barry, but then I remembered my light theory. With his white LEDs illuminating half the forest, that thing could be standing right at the edge of the trail. I ashamedly let Barry come to me. After I lowered my window, he rested his elbows just inside the door and gave me his signature grumpy look with one eyebrow cocked and his lips pulled slightly inward behind his white goatee. He said,
"I see you're searching real hard."
I argued, "I did search, but what I found was pretty, I don't know, spooky." Barry rolled his eyes.
"You better not have called me out here to tell a ghost story."
I had, I feared, done just that.
"Listen, sir, you know I wouldn't have called you if I didn't think this was something dangerous. A camper and I heard something I can't explain, and then I saw..."
I didn't trail off because I was embarrassed. I trailed off because I couldn't handle the light anymore. That shadow thing could have been right behind Barry for all I knew. Neither of us were safe in the light.
"Saw what?"
Barry asked impatiently.
"Could you kill your headlights?" I asked.
He did not respond.
"Look, it's just that..."
And now to deliver the crazy part. "Ah, but I found a way around it at the last second." I said,
"You might see it for yourself if there's no light."
"All right, then."
Barry sauntered back to his Jeep. I watched him closely. When he killed his headlights, I swiveled in every direction to see if the shadow had been exposed, but we appeared to be alone. Barry came up on the other side of my truck this time and climbed into the passenger seat. He brought with him a flashlight and a thermos which smelled of dark coffee, richly brewed, which made me jealous.
"You drink coffee in the middle of the night?" I asked, trying to soften Barry's all-business edge.
He said,
"When I get dragged out of bed at 4 a.m, I do. Sun's gonna be up in less than 3 hours. Don't think there's much chance of me going back to sleep tonight. My wife made this for me on the way out. You know you woke her up too."
He pulled that card anytime I called him at night. I'd met his wife. She's a sweet woman who I knew felt more sorry for me out in the forest alone than for her grumpy husband. Yet, I asked Barry to please share my apology with her when he went home. I finally told him exactly what happened, right down to the detail of the thing vanishing in the light. I didn't phrase it to sound paranormal or supernatural. I pinned the blame on myself for not watching closely enough or understanding what I saw. I half expected Barry to get out, storm back to his Jeep, and drive straight home. But he sat calmly, taking everything in. I couldn't bring myself to look at him until I finished. Then, I was shocked to see his face had softened. He looked calm and almost apologetic. Something about seeing him that way made me more afraid.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
He started, then trailed off, staring blankly ahead. No, watching the trees.
"I owe you an apology, Tom. You did the right thing calling me out here."
"Thanks," I said stupidly.
"I think you might have seen something we used to call Skinner's Shadow."
"Local folklore?" I asked. Barry said,
"Of the modern variety, I suppose. So far as I know, nobody's seen or heard Skinner's Shadow for maybe 10 years. Though, it's hard to know when it's around unless it calls to you."
"But you've seen it before?" I asked.
Barry shook his head. He said,
"I had a supervisor when I became a ranger. You probably think I'm tough, huh? Well, this guy made me look like a pushover. Dean Skinner, that was his name. Old Dean hated when anybody on the force would talk about the myths and monsters people say hide out in these woods. He was both a hard scientist and a devout Catholic. Neither of those religions leave much room for mystery."
I chuckled, thinking Barry was being funny.
His stern glance warned me not to interrupt again.
Dean didn't stay overnight, but during the off-season he stayed late. He was a real guardian of this park, and he didn't trust the visitors or the newbies on night duty. No, he never trusted anybody, really. He'd usually stick around until the campground had gone quiet. Then he'd get on home, sleep a few hours, and be back when people started to stir in the morning. I don't know how he did it. We always joked that he was going to snap one day. And then he did.
Barry stopped to thoughtfully sip his coffee. I had never seen him so intense before, except when he was angry. Anger, I had previously thought, was Barry's only fully developed emotion. Now he seemed sad, though, and a little pained. The memory he was digging up hurt him. I could tell.
Campers' cell phones didn't really get service out here back then, he continued. And neither did ours. We had radios, but they barely worked, you know. People had to come to us directly to report anything. One night, Dean was getting ready to leave. The campground had gone quiet, and I was just settling in for the night. Somebody knocked on the door of the station, and Dean opened it. There was a woman there. She looked and sounded like she'd sprinted all the way from the campground. She told us somebody was screaming in the woods. She said they weren't saying anything she could understand, but they sounded hurt. That's almost exactly what happened to me tonight, I said.
Yep, I know, Barry replied. And if I'd made the connection when you called me, I'd have told my wife to skip the coffee and hurried over here double time.
My palms started to sweat.
I took the lady back to the campground to try to listen for the lost person and call their location to Dean over the radio. He went up to start checking the trails. The lady took me to the spot where she'd heard the voice, and there was a big group of people gathered there. Of course, I asked if anyone was missing, but nobody was. We all stood there and quietly listened. And after a few minutes, I heard it. It sounded a little bit like a bird and a little bit like a kid, I interrupted.
Barry nodded slowly.
So you heard it too, he said. I tried to pinpoint the sound and radioed up to Dean. He didn't answer, so I radioed again. Then I heard him. Everybody there did. We all heard him scream, and not through the radio.
I started holding my breath without realizing it.
Son, I want you to imagine the biggest, toughest guy you know. Barry didn't realize that was him, screaming like a terrified child. I still remember it. That sort of sound doesn't leave you. Hearing it made me the most scared I've ever been.
On cue, a now far away echoed. It sounded much closer to the campground than to us. What do we do? I asked. How did you get rid of it last time?
Barry, the most anxious I have ever seen him, said, "We didn't."
He glanced through the back window and swore.
I boxed you in, Tom. Let's just get out and take my Jeep down there.
But what are we going to do? I asked again.
Barry said, "Try to keep it away. It's a creature of the night. Come morning, everyone should be safe."
The clock read 4:27, approximately 2 hours from sunrise. I prepared for the longest 2 hours of my life. Barry and I ran back to his Jeep, crossing paths between the two vehicles so he could take the driver's seat. Barry picked up his story as he jammed the Jeep into reverse, saying,
"Soon as I heard Dean screaming, I jumped in my truck and rushed up the trail."
"This trail?" I asked.
"No, one that got buried in an avalanche just before you came on." I found Dean's truck idling, and I yelled for him, but didn't get an answer. Then I found him huddled around the other side of his truck, sitting in the headlights, leaning against the bumper. His cheek got all burned by the radiator, but he didn't seem to notice. Didn't notice me, neither. Dean was just sorta gone.
I could see in his eyes he wasn't right, but I thought he'd be okay eventually. "What did it do to him?" I asked. Barry sniffed. Dean never spoke again. He lived the rest of his years basically institutionalized. He couldn't take care of himself anymore. He'd have just rotted away. I said, "Sorry to hear that, but I mean, what did it do to him?" Barry said, "Wasn't a mark on his body, if that's what you're wondering. Didn't look like anything had touched him, but something did. I just think in a different way than we usually mean. It touched whatever it is that made him human. It took that from him. Through what little the doctors and shrinks could get out of him, we figured out Dean saw nothing more than a shadowy figure up there on that trail. That's why everybody took to calling it Skinner's shadow. It's been a long, long time since..." Barry cut himself short and slammed on the brakes. He looked at me, eyes wide. I returned his look with one of total confusion. "You didn't hear it?" he asked. I shook my head. Barry rolled down both of our windows and leaned his head out. Then I heard the unmistakable bawl of a grown man in pain, terror, or both. Barry slammed on the gas, tires spinning, kicking chunks of dirt out and spraying dust in the air which filtered through the open windows. "That came from the campground," I uselessly stated. Barry growled, "I know," as his Jeep lurched forward, throwing me back. I suddenly realized I had left my shotgun locked in my truck. I hoped Barry had a gun or two in the back of his vehicle. We bounded across a grassy area, bypassing the roads and cutting straight toward the campground. The screaming man went silent after just the one agonized scream. But just as Barry had described the late Dean Skinner's scream, the sound would not leave my memory. To this day, I can hear it clearly. We pulled up next to a gathered crowd of sleepy campers in hoodies, sweatshirts, and beanies. A couple of them waved frantically to flag us down. One approached my window as we jolted to a stop.
"Oh, thank God, you're a park ranger."
"What happened?" I asked. A few others swarmed me. Barry didn't put on his uniform before he came, so the campers did not immediately recognize his authority. He took advantage of this freedom to move around the small crowd and reach the vacant victim in the center. A sobbing woman held the victim's head while he stared blankly into the woods, repeatedly whispering his version of the horrible auk sound. I told everyone to back up while I scanned the trees, but it seemed Skinner's shadow, satisfied with its harvested soul, had moved on. Barry grabbed both of my shoulders. I saw complete despair in his shadowy face. He said,
"We were too late, Tom. It got him."
He looked down and kicked the dirt, then said,
"He's gone. Like Dean, he's gone."
Barry drove the victim and his partner to the hospital 25 miles away. I sent everyone back to the relative safety of their tents while I stood guard. I wished dearly for somewhere safe to wait for Barry to return. We had both agreed we couldn't waste the time bringing my truck down, so I sat on a stump, staring into the trees, in plain sight of a creature that may or may not have been there. Barry made it back an hour later, and we were able to sit in his Jeep until sunrise. The story didn't make the news or anything. No one else saw what happened to the victim, and a man having a psychotic break isn't exactly newsworthy. The victim, whose name I've omitted for privacy, is still alive, but essentially a vegetable. I check in on him from time to time to pay penance for my failure to protect him that night. He never says a word, but occasionally I hear him under his breath whispering. Neither Barry nor I turned in our badges or anything dramatic afterwards. I don't see Barry too much anymore, but I'm glad someone else who experienced that night is still on the force. Someone else who believes wholeheartedly in Skinner's shadow. Whenever I share the story with a new recruit, they inevitably express doubt, and I send them to Barry. They usually show up the next day a little somber, but alert. There hasn't been any sign of the shadow thing since, but I'm out here watching. I could have taken a day shift by now, but I'm sticking to nights. As soon as the sun comes up in the park, I start feeling uneasy. At least at night, I have a chance of spotting the thing before it gets me. If it does still creep around during the day, under the sun, well, you'd never know.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.